coming in as Loeb. Milodyke centered it.
Going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is a Thursday, May 1st. Welcome, welcome. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Hello, Vix. Happy May Day.
I jumped the gun. I got so excited to say hi to you there.
It's good to have you, pal. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line's always open for you at 960-960. Would love to hear from you this hour. Kevin Woodley joins us, our goaltending expert, a little bit later on this hour. But first, you know, one of the things that Flames fans instantly glommed onto, or a lot of Flames fans, and I know I certainly did as well, glommed onto when Craig Conroy was introduced as general manager a little less than 2 years ago, was when he talked about we're going to get younger. One of the big things for Craig Conroy since the very beginning of him being GM was we need to become a younger team. And it takes time. You know, there had to be a number of players that were traded away before they could open up more spots for young players, and injuries have to happen. It's a process, and it continues to be a process. But 2 years ago, we saw both Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil make their NHL debuts days apart in early November, and then last with the Flames the rest of the season. And neither Zary nor Pospisil have seen the American League since. This season, Matt Coronato and Dustin Wolf became full-time NHLers after being part-time NHLers the year before. And Coronato had a 24-goal season. Dustin Wolf is almost certainly going to be a Calder Trophy finalist when that's announced on Monday. Even Adam Klapka made the best case for himself in the back quarter of the season as a full-time NHLer. So over the last couple of years, if you want to include Klapka, you throw Klapka, Wolf, Coronato, Zary, Pospisil as five guys who have become full-time NHLers, or pretty damn close to it in Klapka's case. Throw in a couple of other players who have also made their NHL debuts at different times, and not just in the Game 82 way that Zane Parekh and company did 2 weeks ago, but also throughout the season, we've seen different guys make their NHL debuts. So I think the Flames have done a pretty good job within the parameters of getting younger and graduating players to the next level. So my question then becomes, for the first half of this hour, Vix, who is that next player going to be? Who are the players that we should have our eyes on next season as the prospect of prospects to go from being at a lower level to close to full-time NHLers? And the answer has to start with Zane Parekh, right? Like that has to be the number one answer. There can't really be, it would be hard to put anybody ahead of Parekh in this conversation as someone that you're pretty confident is going to be taking that next step next season.
Yeah, by default, he's number one. I think there'd be more of a debate or maybe more of a question around his status if he was able to go play in the NCAA, and maybe you want him to get a year of seasoning playing against, you know, 20 to 24-year-olds before you have him turn pro. But the fact that the CHL-NHL agreement exists and he can only play in the CHL, or he can only play in the NHL outside of Europe, of course, but we're not going to get into that debate.
Because
it makes no sense. The fact that he can only be in one of those two destinations, and in one of those destinations, he scored 30 goals in back-to-back seasons as a defenseman. He's got two of the three highest producing seasons in the entire Canadian Hockey League over the course of the last 25 years. Like, the OHL doesn't make any sense. And if Europe doesn't make any sense, by default, that only leaves the NHL. Now, we can sit here and debate how many games or what does it look like, so on and so forth. We're way too soon for that because we're sitting here on May 1st, and a lot of that discussion will happen September 15th after he's finally had a full summer of training and is able to get himself into a position where he can better compete for an NHL job, and we'll see how he does in his second NHL training camp. But yeah, he's the de facto guy that you would go to in this conversation solely because of the fact of his situation is either OHL, no, that doesn't make sense, or NHL. And then from there you go, okay, how many games, what does it look like? Does he get released to the World Juniors? Is it a slow spot start burn like we saw the Anaheim Ducks do with Leo Carlson last season? All these questions will obviously be answered in the matter of months, but for the time being and for the sake of this discussion, automatically defaults as the number one option.
Well, and I feel like there's so many options for the Flames when it comes to Parekh. Like, I know that on the surface, well, it's like the OHL or the NHL, those are your options, but because I'm quite certain Parekh will be in the NHL to start, he's going to have to have a historically bad training camp to not start in the NHL. Where it goes from there, you then can, there's different paths that it can go down, but he is going to have to be so poor in training camp and so clearly not ready that they would be hurting the team and the player by putting him in the NHL. And that's really the only circumstance I don't see Parekh being in the NHL to start next year. And then you go from there, because there just is so, it doesn't make a lick of sense to send him to the Ontario League. It doesn't make a lick of sense to send him to the American League because you can't. So like the NHL is the only, it's not the perfect option, but in my eyes, it's the only viable option. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's the only one that makes even a slight bit of sense. And I think it makes a good chunk of sense as well. First of all, I mean, 2 weeks ago, Zane Parekh made his NHL debut. I know it was game 82 against the Kings team that had already clinched the number 2 seed in the Pacific, but Kings were playing Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar and Adrian Kempe and Kevin Fiala. No, that was David Rittich in net. David Rittich has worse numbers against the Calgary Flames than I think I would have against the Calgary Flames.
Well, let's not go that far.
I'm going to go that far. I think.
Wow.
Road Warrior. Warrior pads and mask on.
You think that high of yourself?
I just think that low of David Rittich when he plays against the Flames.
Big save, Dave.
I jest, of course.
Yes.
But I thought Parekh looked very much at home and like he belonged in his NHL debut 2 weeks ago in LA.
He didn't look fish out of water, and that's step one to making the 2025-26 Calgary Flames is going into that game not only just surviving, but, I mean, the stats will show and the eye test will show that he thrived in that game, and that's a positive step for this discussion and the fact that, yeah, he's only got these two options, and one really isn't an option, so
it benefits
the team and the player that he had a good game, even though it was only 18 minutes of work.
You would have been cringing a little more. Like, if you're Craig Conroy, you're like, ugh, if he had a poor game, you're like, we know we got to put him in the NHL next year, but, oh, I wish he would have played better. He played really well. He was one of the best players for the Flames that night. So, and again, you're talking to the king of, well, consider the sample size. That's me. So I get that, but at the very least, the very little 3 periods of NHL sample size we have was strong, and you have options. So maybe you don't have a lot of options in terms of where he can play in October, but let's just say that we're correct and he will start in the NHL next year. They do have options. They've got the load management path if they want to take it.
Yeah.
Leo Carlson in Anaheim's first year, they really managed his workload because they felt like, you know, the frame needs, he needs to put some size onto that frame, a little more strength onto that frame. And so not having him stand up to the rigors of an 82-game schedule against the best, most physical players on the planet, maybe that's better for his development. And we'll see in the long run, whether or not that was the right way to go or not. But that's one thing that the Flames could do is that, hey, maybe instead of playing 82 games, Zane plays 52 games, and they strategically have him sit some other games, and they use those stretches to, you know, really get Rick Davis and the strength and conditioning squad to really target some areas.
Get him on the program.
That's an option. They could send him to the World Juniors. If all of a sudden, you know, Parekh has been, he's played well, he's okay, but like we think him going to play for the World Juniors and being the number one defenseman or a top pair defenseman for Team Canada could really help his development. they could do that as well. You know, the Flames haven't always gone down that road. In fact, the last few times they've had that opportunity, they have said, no, we're not sending that player. Matthew Tkachuk didn't go to the back to the World Juniors. Sean Monahan never got his shot at the World Juniors.
He was hurt, I believe, was he not? Didn't he break his foot in that instance?
He might have, but they weren't going to send him anyway.
Right. Well, he was an everyday guy.
He was en route to a 20-goal season, yeah. Right? They weren't going to send him anyway. But if they could send him if they wanted. And then they could also do what Edmonton did with Leon Draisaitl. And I've said this a few times. You go back to, so Leon Draisaitl was a third overall pick of the 2014 draft, as we know, one pick before Sam Bennett. He was coming off a 38-goal, 105-point season in the Western League with Prince Albert. He made the Oilers out of training camp and played 37 games with Edmonton. So they burned the first year of his entry-level deal, and they started that clock ticking, but they didn't give him a year of accrued UFA time. So he did not accrue a season towards becoming an unrestricted free agent. And so they sent him back to the Western League. He had been traded to Kelowna by this time.
The Ryan Huska Kelowna Rockets.
That's
I believe.
Right. No, that was Dan Lambert's.
Dan Lambert's Kelowna Rockets. Knew there was a Flames connection there.
There was a Flames connection. That was the first year that Ryan was the head coach in Stockton.
Right.
Or Adirondack, I think, at the time. The first year.
Axar Ben Knights?
No, it wasn't that far back.
Okay.
But he didn't accrue a year of unrestricted free agency. And so the Flames could do that as well. If they're approaching the midway mark, they're like, you know, Zane's given it a valiant shot, but he's just not ready. You can send him back to Saginaw, or maybe there's a team in the Ontario League. I mean, NHL teams have got a little influence, right? They can be like, hey, you know, what about making a trade for our guy? And maybe it's an OHL powerhouse that goes out and acquires a guy like Perek. You know, did you see what Sudbury gave up to bring in Henry Muse just before the trade deadline? A deal like that. And then all of a sudden, Perek goes back and can do what Leon did. He went back to Kelowna. Had 53 points in 32 games. All I'm saying is there are options for Perek if it's not going exactly perfectly as a first-year NHLer.
There are certainly options-ish. Again, you're limited to two leagues, but I do like the idea if he comes into training camp, he doesn't quite look ready. Yeah, you keep him up. You get him on the program. You get him into certain games. You spot start him, as you mentioned. You send him to the World Juniors, and you see how he progresses. That to me is option one. That is the now that depends. Now the true option one is he comes into training camp, blows the doors off, and he's a top six guy on the team. But failing that, I like the idea of keeping him around the team, keeping him around the organization, getting him working with the development coaches and strength coaches. And then seeing where he is post-Christmas, post-World Juniors.
Any other D-men that you think have a good chance of graduating? Because there's one for me that I think I would put at the top of my list is like, you know what? I've got my eye on this guy coming into training camp. I think this guy is ready to crest being a full-time NHLer or close to it. And that's Jan Kuznetsov. You know, talking to whether it's Trent Cull or Joe Cirella, throughout the year, Craig Conroy, Brad Pascal, like, you know, there's a lot of appreciation for how much Kuznetsov has grown as a defenseman with the Wranglers in the American League. I think he may have jumped Solovyov when it comes to who is the most ready to be a full-time NHLer or the most or best suited to be an NHLer. I do think there will be an opening on the left side. I think that there will be room and opportunity for one of their organizational left shot defensemen. So Kuznetsov is at the front of the list for me, but also on that left side are Solovyov and Grushnikov, and they'd have the same opportunity with a good training camp. Brstevich is a right shot. Which makes it a little bit more crowded with Pahal and Uyghur and Anderson all being on the team right now. But Brstevich made his NHL debut 2 weeks ago. So those are four names on defense. I put Kuznetsov at the top of my list, but between Kuznetsov, Brstevich, Solovyov, and Grushnikov, they've got some potential options to knock on the door next year.
Well, and here's what's sort of encouraging if you're one of those players is I see, at least from my perspective, and again, it's May 1st and we haven't gone through the offseason, we haven't gone through July 1 and free agency and all that. But if I'm a prospect in general in Calgary's organization right now, I think I want to be a defenseman if my goal is to get to the NHL as quick as possible, because you've got Ball Anderson. Hanley's going to be an unrestricted free agent, so his status will be up in the air.
So and so is Anderson's.
Let's not forget. Yep. I've got him bolded on my sheet. We can circle back to that. Then you have Uyghur and then Bean Pahal, Miramanov. To me, with what we've seen from Craig Conroy, sometimes you'll be in a situation where the tie goes to the veteran. To me, where the Calgary Flames are and what they're trying to do, tie goes to the younger player. So if you can outplay in training camp a Miramanov, a Bean, a Pahal, you have that opening for Hanley if he's not back. Anderson, we don't know what his status is. There's opportunity for young defensemen in this organization to knock on that door and not just knock on it, kick it in, and to steal an old Bob Hartleyism, if I'm crediting it to the right coach, but steal a jersey, steal a roster spot. And to me, it looks like there's more opportunity on the left side right now than the right. So yeah, Kuznetsov, Soloviov, those are your more mature prospects in terms of pro experience. Kuznetsov's got 216 games in the AHL. Soloviev, 229. So those are players that you almost expect or demand to be competing for one of those jobs on the left side. Yeah. And you hope that they force your hand to have uncomfortable conversations with a Jake Bean or a Daniil Miramanov, although he's a right shot, or a Braden Pahal, again, another right shot. But you want those players in particular, and Brustevich is there. If he's ready to do that as well, then that's all the more perfect. But I see the opportunity for a young player on this team to primarily be on the blue line.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they'll be disappointed if one of those, I think they'll be really disappointed.
Yeah.
If one of those guys doesn't make it a difficult decision or doesn't make it an easy decision in a good way for them in September. What about up front? This was Stephen Ellis, a great conversation with Steve from Daily Faceoff on Wednesday's show. He helped us start previewing the 2025 NHL draft, which is less than 2 months away now. And Vix asked him, you know, when you look at the Flames, where do the Flames need help? You know, taking a look at their prospects in the organization, where do they need to target in the draft? And, you know, Stephen pinpointed the correct answer, and that would be that would be down the middle. But I thought, you know, gave an interesting kind of look at Calgary's group of forward prospects right now.
You look at what they've got on the wing there. They got Matvei Gridin, I think's good. I really like Snaev. I'm really happy to see him turn pro. There could be some more wing depth, but then you look at center, and Samuel Honzik, like, I know he could play center, he could play wing. But then that's really it. Like Rory Karens, I don't know what his like long-term future really is. And then I'm trying to think, like Luke Misa. I like Luke Misa, but I'm not sure he's an NHL caliber player.
So that's just a little bit of the conversation with Steve Ellis, which is available wherever you get your podcasts right now from Wednesday's program. Like, I don't know if there are guaranteed, like, oh, that guy at forward. Because so I look at Karens. I think that's an interesting situation. At the very least, I think Rory Karens will get a much better look at training camp than he did this year, where he was part of group three and didn't get into a training a preseason game. Like, Rory Karens was basically an also-ran and an afterthought at training camp 2024, and then had an incredible first half of the American League season and put himself on the map. Good on him. I'm not sure Suniev's ready. I didn't mind his debut in LA, but I don't know if he's ready.
There's nothing wrong with giving him the Matt Coronato treatment of spending primarily his first pro season in the American Hockey League. I mean, it worked for Coronato.
Yep.
And they profile somewhat similarly.
They do. Yep.
Wingers with great shots.
Sam Morton debuted in that same game. He might be ready for a fourth line type role at the NHL. Although if they bring back Kirkland, I don't know.
That's the issue. And when I was talking about it, I'd rather be a defenseman in the Flames organization right now than a forward. Because you run through, and their top nine is somewhat virtually set. And Huberto, Kadri, Coronato, Zary, Frost, Sharangovich, Farabee, Backlund, Coleman. And then you have on your fourth line, if Klapka's graduated for a full-time role, you have Klapka. Is Lomberg a guy that's going to be an 82-game guy? Or are you hoping that a young player can sort of give him competition for that fourth line left wing spot, and then you've got the center spot on that fourth line open? Is that a Kirkland? Is that a Morton?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily the spot you'd want to drop Karens into. And for me, Seeing Cairns in NHL games this year, to me, he might profile more as a winger than
a
center.
I think
so. That's not necessarily a spot where I'd want him. It'll be tough for a young player, whether it's Cairns, Stromgren, Suniev, Morton. Those would be kind of the candidates I would look.
We're sleeping. I'm not sleeping, but we're skipping Hanzek, who made the team out of camp and then was sent back to the American League. Would Hanzek, former first rounder, be a guy who's ready to go and maybe make more of a push? I wonder about Gridden a little bit. Like, is Gridden, do I think that he's a NHL threat in training camp? Probably not. But is Gridden back in the queue? Or do they think about going American League with him? Because they have all the options. Because Gridden wasn't drafted out of the CHL.
He's drafted out of the USHL.
They can do whatever they want with him in terms of where they play him. So I'm curious about that. But I don't know if there's an obvious one at forward. I think probably Hanzek and Cairns would be the most obvious ones.
See, I do wonder Morton. He's the most mature. He's the oldest.
Yeah, he's 25 years old.
He doesn't have a whole lot of pro experience because he just played his first pro season. But he's a guy to me that I don't think you'd necessarily stunt too much of his growth by giving him 8 minutes on the fourth line.
I think that's what he profiles as.
Right. Bottom six center that can maybe squeeze out a couple of points.
It's kind of like when they were giving Garnet Hathaway fourth line minutes as a 23-year-old. You're like,
right.
Well, that's what he profiles as, so you're okay doing that because that actually
You wouldn't want to do that to a Sam Hanzik, for example.
Yeah.
But Sam Morton would be a different case.
Text line, 96960. Jordan in Coquitlam says, for me, I think the next called-up player has to be either Morton or Brstevich. Morton might depend on the direction for next season. Is Kirkland the 4C and Brstevich based on Anderson's future? Both played well in the last game, and they could fit in quite well. I think Brstevich especially looked great with the Wranglers all season. He does preface this all with Zane Parekh is the obvious
right
one on top of that. This from Corey, do you gents worry that putting Parekh in the NHL could have the same bad results as the Bennett experiment? Well, Sam Bennett was 18 at the time when they kind of rushed him along. Remember, he was 18, had a good training camp, but then hurt his shoulder and lied about it.
His shoulder was hurt at the combine even. Remember the pull-ups?
Yeah, but then aggravated it and it got bad. Kind of lied about it.
Lost the season of development, basically came back for Kingston, then joined the Flames.
Had a good postseason that year, was really good.
Playoff Sam Bennett.
Over Anaheim. But then, obviously, as we know, the next year he had an 18-goal rookie season, but it kind of just dropped off from there. But I do think Parekh's a little bit older, and I do think they've also learned from some of their mistakes over the years, too, which is pretty important.
Yeah, I don't have that Sam Bennett concern when it comes to Zane Parekh.
Dwayne in Midnapur says, Zane looks like his size isn't a problem. Did you see that hit on Coleman? he also got belted a couple times in that game, jumped right back up, which I was impressed with.
I just wonder, like, and using that as a sample size, like, how would he fare in October when a Quentin Byfield leans on him, for example, or he's fishing a puck out of a corner in a battle with a Tom Wilson? Yeah. Now, there's a lot of defensemen in the NHL that are going to struggle with that, whether they're 20 years old or they're 35 years old. But those are some of the things where if you're dedicated to working with him as much off the ice as it is giving him game time and you're able to balance that, then it becomes less of a concern.
96960 on the text line. Ian in Cranbrook says, guys, Hunter Brstevich and Sam Morton are my picks. Parekh's too young and not seasoned enough. The problem is, there's not a lot of great options there.
Like, he's going to play, like, if you send him back to the OHL, he's going to play for Canada at the World Juniors. He's going to play 55-ish OHL games in the regular season. He's going to put up 135 points. Like, what's the point?
Colin says, Parekh for sure, but depending on what happens in the offseason, I'd say you're looking at Suniev, Stromgren, maybe Cairns, but it's hard to say at the moment aside from Parekh. I agree. It is very, very... It's very much Parekh and then everybody else right now.
Stromgren's a little bit of a wild card to me because I remember we can go back to Penticton and sitting down and talking with Craig Conroy. Like, Stromgren was a guy that continually came up at the beginning of the season and different parts of the season that he would be a guy that's knocking on the door. I wonder if another off season of putting in the work puts him in a position where he might be one of those players under more consideration to actually start the NHL.
And finally, Brad says, I'm confused. Can Parekh go down to the American League halfway through the year, say after 20 games? No, he cannot. Essentially, it's silly, but Zane Parekh, could play in the American League next year only after his CHL season or the NHL season is done. He could not play in the AHL until those things happen. It's silly. I think it's a rule very much in need of rethinking, and yet I'm not holding my breath. I don't think the CHL supplies, and maybe it'll get different now with the new CHL NCAA rule. The CHL supplies so many players to the NHL and kind of incubates so many players. They've been such a pathway and a pipeline to the highest league that I think the NHL has their interests in mind a lot of the time and will continue to. The reason why this rule exists is to protect the Canadian Hockey League.
Well, and now
they don't want the best 18 and 19 year old players leaving to go play in the American League because their parent team in the NHL thinks that's the best move.
Well, and now the CHL, now more than ever, is going to do whatever they can to protect that because they are going to lose personnel to the NCAA.
Could Zane go play in the NCAA next year? No, they could not. No, he could not. He is not eligible to play in the NCAA.
He signed his entry level, just as clarification.
This says, could he go play in Europe? Isn't that what Matthews did? Matthews did that before he
was
drafted.
In his draft year. Same with Brant Clarke. He went and played in Slovakia in his draft year. But that was also a COVID-ish year, I think.
The Flames don't want to have their most prized prospect in the hands of another team. This year with Saginaw is a little bit different because, again, there's a trust level with the Canadian Hockey League. You put him in Sweden or you put him in Switzerland or you put him in, you're not putting him in the KHL. Put him in Finland. You don't have control. He's 8,000 kilometers away.
They could have him play in 8 minutes a night.
Right? And they don't care. They're trying to win their games. So it was a little bit different with Matthews or Clark because they weren't drafted guys. Flames want their guys to have their eyes and hands on them. They want their strength and conditioning team to be able to put the programs in place, all that type of stuff. Fun conversation. Be interesting to see once we get to September who some of those players might be who are the next to graduate to the NHL. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks. You know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now to check in with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley. It is Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. And you know, we will talk some goaltending with Mr. Woodley, but we're going to start, Kev, by flexing the other muscle, and that would be your job as the beat reporter for the Vancouver Canucks over at NHL.com because, first of all, hi, Woodley, and B, it's been an eventful offseason, and we're only 2 weeks in for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. hey, why stop with the regular season, right? Like, on a positive note, selfishly and personally, I get paid by the story. And they have kept me very busy writing stories with NHL.com. So, think about where we're at now from where we were a year ago, right? Like, they were just finishing the playoff round against Nashville, heading into what would be a 7-game series against Edmonton, one in which they blew a lead, despite not having the number one goaltender, despite a dismal performance from Elias Pettersson. And since then, they've walked away from or lost Mike Yeo, Ian Clark, although he's still in the organization, but not in any hands-on role that affects the day-to-day, one of the top goalie coaches in the league for the last couple decades. I feel like I'm missing a bunch here. Now, Rick Tocchet,
yep.
Adam Foote, who is now being reported, and I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a candidate here. That would be interesting, but is reportedly, according to Frank Saravelli, on the list as a head coach candidate in several places. Sergei Gonchar, They have lost JT Miller. They are about to lose Brock Besser, almost certainly, Q Suter, and increasingly talk that Demko may be part of whatever package is required to fix the gap you've got up the middle when you move Miller. Like, it is stunning to be where they are now from where they were a year ago.
So what in your mind was the biggest, was it as simple as what you just laid out is why Rick Tocchet decided to move on?
Well, I don't want to speak for him. And I know that Jim Rutherford said there was an inclination, a desire for family reasons to go east. So we'll see where he ends up, because I know there are also ties on the West Coast and to the western part of the United States. I mean, the off-season home is in Vegas, and that's for a reason. So we'll see where ultimately where he ends up. I do believe, though, because I talked about this as far back as a year ago last summer and asked a question on a Zoom about his contract status, because I had a source that thought this was inevitable as far back as a year ago. And in their mind, it was tied to, and I think this might not be fair to him, because by God, there is going to be enough pressure on him and coming back next season as is. But I think you can draw a straight line between a lot of this and the decision to re-up Elias Pettersson to the largest contract in franchise history last year. I'm not sure that was a move that Rick Tocchet saw as the one for them to make necessarily. And so if your head coach tells you maybe that's not the guy to lead us to the next level, and shortly thereafter you re-up him to, like I said, the largest contract in the history of the franchise, is that the kind of thing that might lead somebody to think twice? Despite what, from all accounts, was an uncharacteristic for this organization, lucrative coaching offer to stay. And despite the relationships he clearly has, I feel like it felt, and I'm not saying I know this, but it felt almost like, not hurt feelings, but like there was a little bit of hurt there for Jim Rutherford to have the guy he brought in handpicked, you know, got rid of Bruce Boudreaux very dramatically, so that he could bring in this handpicked guy, all the history they have in Pittsburgh, and he walks away, you know, just over a year and a half later. But I do think that you can draw a straight line between, maybe not a straight line, but there are lines linking between that decision and a lot of what has happened since.
Kev, are the Canucks dangerously close to adding Quinn Hughes to the list of departures? And I just go back to the Rutherford quote right after Tocchet's departure. I hope he's playing golf, because usually he returns my calls right away and he hasn't called me back.
Yeah, I'm not going to read too much into that one. I think he was having a little fun with it, but I would read more into the warning. I mean, you know, Jim Rutherford's article, you know, which was set up in the Globe and Mail, that started the sort of the finally public admission of the Pettersson-Miller issues that ultimately led to Miller being traded, was preparing the fan base for the trade and for the diminished returns that would eventually come for JT Miller. So what were the comments, forget after Tocchet left, but the year-end comments about Quinn Hughes wanting to play with his brothers?
Yeah.
And that they're going to prepare to offer him, you know, whatever is required to keep him, but that may not be enough. That's the one that jumps out. And the fact that Quinn Hughes has been so complimentary of Rick Tocchet publicly and privately, and of Adam Foote, and of the work they've done here. And so to know how strong that relationship is and how important it is to Quinn, and to see Rick leave less than, what, like 8 days after, you know, throwing that bombshell out there about wanting to play with his brothers, like, that doesn't bode well. You're right. And he's 2 years removed from unrestricted free agency and having a decision to go wherever he wants. You know, he is not far from being able to Matthew Tkachuk this.
Yep.
And so if he makes it clear to them that that's where they're headed, then they may have no choice but to make a move ahead of that 2-year deadline if they don't think they can retain him. It really is hard to believe where they were. I mean, he's not just the greatest defenseman in franchise history, you know, and hey, listen, it's with all due respect, it's not the deepest list, but like when you think of the Burrays and the Luongos in the Hall of Fame, the Sedin twins in the Hall of Fame, like it's really easy to look at Quinn Hughes and say he's probably the best player already in franchise history. You know, he caught Alex Edler for career points by a defenseman in the end of this season in less than half the games. We've never seen a talent like this in this market, especially on the back end. And to maybe have the window on to have the last regime walk him straight to unrestricted free agency with a 6-year deal, bargain as it is right now, but then not be able to build enough around him that he wants to stay. If ultimately that happens, boy, that's going to be a really tough pill for a lot of people to swallow, especially given how quickly everything fell apart this year. And at a time, I might add, when the local fan base is being asked to pay a not insignificant raise in ticket prices for a second straight season.
Last one on the Canucks. And so one thing that I had, and obviously I'm not as in touch with the market as you would be, and we're not in the market, but that's the first time I'd heard that potentially Demko would be a guy that if they're looking to recoup on the JT Miller loss and trying to replace him down the middle, that Demko could be a part of that. So Thatcher Demko, not necessarily a long-term Canuck for a lot of people either, hey?
I don't know that one. On the surface, if you take everyone for their word, Demko said he'd like to sign a long-term extension here, and they said they want to have him back, but there has to be risk on both sides. So, like, everyone said all the right things, but that's what everybody does on locker cleanout day. They say all the right things. And the truth is, they committed $4.5 million to Kevin Lankinen after a sensational start to the season, their most important player, the only reason they were even in a playoff race. And he earned that. But once they made that commitment, this isn't a group. You talk about having room left for Quinn. It's not a group that typically spends, at least historically in their management history, on goaltending. And one healthy season of Thatcher Demko, and he's in the $8 million conversation. So unless that I want to stay and we want to have him is on a steep discount, I don't know that they're taking the risk to bring him back. You know, like if you, next year is set up perfectly. 9.5 is not too bad to have two guys capable of being number ones in the net every single night. Because one of the other reasons they missed the playoffs last year is because they didn't get enough points when Artur Shelov started. So having somebody else that can allow Kevin Lankinen to be at his best, which is when he was fresh, and give Thatcher Demko a chance to get through a season help, like that all makes sense. But you are so depleted now down the middle, and they know and have admitted and talked about the unrestricted market not being a place where they can solve that problem, so it needs to be by trade. You know, Thatcher Demko is a standalone asset because of the injury history, but B, the fact that goalies typically aren't incredibly valued as standalone assets. I don't know that they get you much, but as part of the package, he might be a really attractive inclusion, and that's kind of what I've been led to believe might be possible. Okay. So who knows, but certainly that's something that seems to be on the table here, because I do think a lot of what was said on the closeout day in terms of, you know, everybody holding hands and wants to stay, love to have them, you know, that's great, but probably both viewing it through the lens of different terms, financially and commitment, than either one is willing to make, one on the high end, one on the low end.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk. Okay, Kev, so from the Canucks who you cover over at NHL.com to you as our goaltending specialist, I got to ask you, because, boy, did I find that quote going into Game 5 from Connor Hellebuck, where he was asked about his plays, like, not only do I need to be better, I'm going to be better. Nobody studies goaltending more than I do. And he just gave a really passionate, like, hey, I know what I need to do. I know where I need to be better, and I will be better. But I'm just curious as to, now that this series is 5 games old and the Jets have the Blues on the ropes, what have we seen from Connor Hellebuck in this series thus far?
I don't know that anybody does study the game or know the game as a goaltender better than Connor Hellebuck. it's part of, and we've talked about this, I think, in the past, about what makes him so unique and so special, and that's his mind, right? I've used the line before. We used to talk about Dominic Hasek, the GOAT, in my opinion, as having a brain like a computer and a body like a slinky, and Hellebuck has the brain like a computer. Doesn't use his body nearly the same way. His philosophy is big and boring, but his brain allows him to get ahead of plays in such a manner that he leaves shooters second-guessing. So if you've got a goaltender with that type of talent and you get into the playoffs, what are you going to do? You're going to take his eyes away. And in the past, it was lateral plays. East-west plays were his biggest relative weakness. And so teams in early playoff years used to go after him with east-west plays. And I think you saw that last night. It was a hell of a pass, you know, but the paddle save that made all the highlight reels, like, he barely moved, right? Like, there was no lateral push. There was no slide. There was no rotation. It was just reach back with the stick and get a piece of it. Now, again, it was a heck of a pass that stranded him, but the fact he was stranded sort of shows you that was one of the early books, like East-West. In the last 2 years, and the Avs sort of went to town on this, they combined East-West with screens and chaos. When a goaltender reads the game as well as Connor Hellebuck, taking away his eyes is the most important thing. And when you look at the 17 goals he's given up in this series, 10 of them have come off either screens or broken plays. And broken plays are, you know, stuff that goes off sticks or butts or legs out in front of you, sometimes into the net, sometimes to somebody else. And the biggest difference between a rebound and a broken play is a rebound I can feel as a goalie. It hits my pad, it hits my arm, it hits me in the head. I know where it's going next. I have an idea. You know, if it hits I feel it off the left pad. I know I lift my right leg instinctively and push in the direction over to my left because that's where the puck went. When it hits something else, chances are it's coming through body so you never saw it. You don't feel it. It's just so hard for him to use his greatest asset, that ability to read, in that environment. And the Blues have done a great job of creating it. The Avs did an incredible job of creating it last year. All through the season, Hellebuck's numbers on screens and broken plays were well above expected, better than average. They actually look like strength. But I think as the concentrated effort of the playoffs, the level of determination to get to those spots in the playoffs compared to the regular season, as it ramps up, he at times hasn't dealt with it very effectively, retreating behind screens. But also the team hasn't done a very good job helping him out the way they did in the regular season. And this is not to call out Brandon Tanev, but it was pointed out in the broadcast, so I'll use the example. Tanev flexes out to the point on the defenseman, and the D-men have had way too much time and space up there as well. But he flexes out, and they criticize him on the broadcast for not blocking the shot as he gets out on that defenseman. My criticism wouldn't be not blocking the shot. It would actually start earlier. He heads out in the wrong lane. Like, screens are part of systems, and if it's a middle screen straight in front of the goaltender, he has to pick a side to see around it, even when you're as big as Connor Hellebuck, and you pick short side. You pick short side because it's the closest path for the puck to go in the net from a shooter, especially as you get down near the circle and into the dot. So you want to cut off the shortest lane, and you can trust you have that little extra time to push across if you need to and reach. The second thing is that middle lane is most often filled with bodies. So you cheat. If you have to cheat, you pick short side because there's usually going to be legs or bodies in the middle, more likely to hit it and not go clean in. But those bodies are supposed to include your players. There's a lane for you as a goalie, and there's a lane for the shot blockers. And in that case, it's one example of many where not only are they not blocking these shots, they're not even in the right lane to start with. And to me, those are and net front and the broken plays, you need to win and be heavier on sticks and box out and win more of those battles than they have against the Blues so far in the season. So I'm not letting Hellebuck off the hook. As he said, he needs to be better. These are not things he struggled to this degree with during the regular season, but he needs a little more help. And then the second goal last night off the rush, those are the moments that make you think, this isn't definitive, it's not absolute, but it sort of leads you towards the path of, oh man, like, is he overthinking in the playoffs? Because that's a routine rush chance. And he's never been a goalie that plays with backwards flow, but he never shuffled, he never moved, he just looked stuck. And the puck goes in along the ice, short side. He totally lost his net. And that is so uncharacteristic. And those are the ones where I can see the narrative about playoffs and overthinking. But the more time he gets in them, the more likely he is to solve them, because he's right. Nobody thinks the game the way he does. Maybe at sometimes overthinking.
Kev, I'd be remiss if I didn't quickly ask about the Edmonton Oilers and Calvin Pickard. What have you seen since he's entered the series?
Well, two things. One, and I think we talked about this, the difference in environment between Calvin Pickard and Stuart Skinner for the Edmonton Oilers all season. Like a 30-point difference. And, you know, it's quite often we use expected save percentage, which just, you know, people hear that phrase, maybe they haven't heard it before. It's essentially what the average NHL goaltender is expected to stop based on the quality of shots that they face. And there was like a 30-point, most people are like, it's a great way of comparing apples to oranges, one team to the other. Because we all know goalies aren't as busy, they don't face the same quality from one team to the next. But it surprises people how often there can be a big disparity within the same team. And that was the case for the Oilers this year. It was like a 28-point difference in the regular season. And it is one of the biggest differences in the playoffs right now. First two games, Stuart Skinner's expected save percentage was .872. In the next three, with Calvin Pickard in net, his expected save percentage is .914.
Woo!
That's a 42-point swing. Now, it's the same team in front of him. It's the same team on the other side. A lot of the times during the regular season, Calvin was playing the lesser lights, and so maybe that accounted for it. Clearly, though, the Oilers got the best of the Kings in the first two, and they have since adjusted their game. So, but at the end of the day, those are two pretty big discrepancies, regular season and playoffs. Clearly, Edmonton plays really hard for this guy. And no, that is not me saying they don't for Stuart Skinner. But for whatever reason, there's a synergy there. Chris Knobloch talked about it after game three when he was asked about going back to Pickard for game four. Like, he talked about how, for whatever reason, they defend better, they play better overall in front of Pickard. And that's been the case in the playoffs. Now, that said, 19 high-danger chances against Stuart Skinner in the first two, 19 high-danger chances against Calvin Pickard in the next three. Stuart Skinner gave up 9 goals on his 19, and Calvin Pickard's only given up 3. And in that crucial game three, he gave up no goals on 7 high-danger chances. He gave up some mids, he gave up a low danger, and usually those kill you. But in key moments, in crunch time, the high-danger stuff, he came up with big saves and big moments. I know even as a goalie guy, it cringes, makes me cringe because they don't want to hear timely saves from me, but he's delivered some of them. And so, you know, that was the criticism of Skinner. They were horrible defensively, especially in game one, worse than any defensive performance in terms of what they gave up than their entire run to the Cup final last year. But you're allowed to stop the tough ones too, and he wasn't stopping enough of them, and yeah. Pickard has.
Great stuff, Kev. Appreciate it as always. I can't wait to talk more playoffs again next week, because I'm sure we'll have more to dive in on and some teams to start wrapping up with as well. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the rest of the first round, eh?
Definitely. Shameless plug for the NHL.com site.
Yes, please.
They've got me in the midst of my, where I look at 100 goals from once we start the second round, we'll do these breakdowns. So I've been up since 1 a.m. looking at video. Every 100 goals on every goalie that's left for the second round of the playoffs, complete breakdowns of sort of, you know, where their strengths and weaknesses lie, how to blame them, how to beat them, and what to look for as we hit to the second round. So it's a fun project that our bosses over at NHL.com support. Make sure you keep an eye out for it as part of the preview packages as we get into the second round. I used to do it for the first round. But I once went 5 straight days with no more than a 2-hour nap, and I figured that might kill me.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of protecting
the 1,600 goals in like 5 days with write-ups to follow. It was a little much. I could do it in my younger days.
You don't say.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks, Kev. We'll look for that. We'll talk to you next week, hey?
Thanks, guys.
Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour, he's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie have been our outstanding producers this hour, and that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.